episode 49 of the Rise Consumer Mindset Podcast. I'm your co-host, Cody Wright, and I'm here with...
Co-host Vince.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. You had a birthday recently, huh?
Birthday, yeah. My birthday was October 9th, last week. I was in the desert. I was in Moab. It was great.
You know how I found out? I'm not big, as much as we are present on social media, I don't really check feed or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I would have found out, I guess, by checking Facebook, but my mom texted me. My mom's got my back. She was like, yo, it's nice. Cody's birthday. And I was like, oh, and I was like, and then I had a lot scheduled that day, but I was like, damn, I should make like a funny, like little edit for his birthday. Based on this like funny song that Adam Sandler made like back in the 80s. And it took me the better part of an hour to edit that thing. And I was like, damn it. Because
nice.
I just wanted it to be like 10 minutes long or whatever.
Yeah.
yeah.
It was a good edit. But yeah, nice to know your mom's got your back.
Yeah. Happy birthday, big guy.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Getting up there.
And what'd you do? You went to Utah?
Yeah. Moab, doing some climbing, you know.
Hey, weren't you crushing it from your girlfriend's perspective?
Yeah. On-site in 11A now.
That's good. Is that your hardest on-site on?
That was my hardest on-site. Yeah. Okay.
For all you non-climbers out there, an on-site means like you got from the bottom of the climb all the way to the top without like resting on the equipment or the rope. And that's called an on-site.
On-site.
And Cody did a 5.11, which is, it's getting up there for like that kind of climbing where you're climbing on that weird protection.
But yeah, it was a fun time. It was sick.
Dude, hats off to you. Was it a challenge for you to get it?
It was. The thing, I don't know, maybe I just climb in the desert better, but like I even like on-sited a bunch of 11s, like just single pitch stuff. Like before I did that tower, I was like kind of cruising for most of them. So just feeling good. But maybe I climb in the desert better than I do like normal climbing. It's like, you know, more cracky and
climbing with you, I've always like seen you as like definitely being proficient and being able to bump up like as far as the numbers go, you know.
Yeah. I think maybe I don't push hard enough on trad, you know, like because I definitely get nervous on gear. I get nervous.
we've told that story on the podcast, have we? Or not?
Which one?
The one of you like falling to your death while rock climbing.
I think so. I don't know. I feel like we have. I don't actually remember.
Just give it the one minute brief. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you can throw a picture of like the Devil's Tower, like here for the podcast or whatever, but
Thank you.
You don't have to, but basically there's this giant tower in Wyoming, Devil's Tower. It's just like, how would you describe it? It's just like a tube sticking up out of the ground.
Yeah, it's a rock tube sticking out of this just flat lands in northeastern Wyoming.
Yeah. So yeah, we were climbing there. Vince, so you took the first... No, you climbed the pitch, right? And you left your gear, basically. So Vince climbed it, left his gear. So like you put like little pieces of gear in to protect yourself. If you fall, you clip them on the way up. Vince got to the top, sent the pitch. Nice. It was legit. Yeah. What's it rated? Is it 10C, 10D?
No, unfortunately, I think it's a 10A. So like,
that's unreal.
It's a renownedly hard 10A.
Yeah,
it's
very like.
No, you know, I think it is 10C.
I want to say it's 10C.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, basically, it's like a long climb, pretty hard. And at the time, I think it was your hardest on site, right?
On gear, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So it was a good send. It's hard to do. So you got to the top, and then we ended up pulling the rope, and I ended up climbing it on lead, basically. But I was using Vince's gear, and I got like probably 3/4 up the route, and I clipped a piece of gear. Looked fine, like the gear was in a good spot, like totally fine, good to fall on. And then I climbed like 10 to 15 feet above that because you ran it out a bunch. Like you probably ran it out like more than you had to. Well, no, enough to send because it was like pretty pumpy, so you just had to like cruise through it. Yeah. So it's pretty run out, and I like was trying to clip the next piece, and basically I just slipped out, like my foot slipped, and I fell to that piece of gear that I had clipped, and the gear ended up breaking. Like just like the cam just snapped. No idea how, but once it snapped, I kept falling, and I fell another like, I mean, all the way down. I fell all the way down the route, probably like it was like 50 feet or so.
It was a high route.
It was pretty high. It was like way high because I was close to the top, like 3/4 up the route, and it's a long route. And basically, I remember just like thinking, oh yeah, I'm dead. I'm dead. Because like, I was like, there's no way there's enough. It was like, there's way too much slack in the rope after that piece is gone. And then there's like a ledge where the other belayer had was belaying me. So basically, I remember like thinking, yeah, I'm dead. And I kind of like closed my eyes. And then I just stopped falling. And I just opened my eyes and I looked to my left. And my belayer, Melanie, she's to my left staring at me like we're eye level. And the ledge is like 2 feet below us. So like it was border, like near death. And I ended up, I quit climbing, I think, for a while. Like it had to have been like 6 to 8 months.
It was longer than that. Like it was probably, it was until like, you truly, like it's only now that you're getting really back into like the track climbing. And that was
now
years
I'm
ago.
Like as stoked as I was then. So like I'm back to that level, you know, and I'm probably, I'm climbing harder now, but like it took a long, I mean, that was two years ago.
It took Cody some PTSD counseling to get over his fear of rock climbing equipment exploding on him. And for those that like aren't rock climbers, like Cody was explaining that I ran it out. That means like I was pushing my own limits. So I kind of assessed the risk and decided to put less equipment in the rock to protect myself, which means like on lead, like Cody was explaining, is like if I'm actively climbing, I'm placing in the gear, right? And I'm progressively keeping myself safe. But if I put less gear, right, if I fall, I'm going to fall to the last piece of protection, but then the rope is through that piece of protection, so I'm going to keep going the same length as I was above it. And then whatever else, slack or the weight of the climber, you know, that's like how much more you keep falling. So you know, the more you run it out, the bigger the chance of a dangerous or a long fall is. And I ran it out already. So as in there was big gaps between the equipment. And then on top of that, Cody's a big boy. He's above that run out equipment. And one of them breaks on top of that. So that's a massive fall. And like, just to describe the environment, this is a national park. It's called the Devil's Tower National Park in Wyoming. And that's all there is. Like, that's the park. The park is a circle around the rock. And the first climb, like the first thing you see when you walk in through, like, and it's a crowded park, first thing you see is that climb. And just to explain, I was up there, right? Because I already made the climb and I was just waiting for Cody to come back up. And I'm just sitting there, and it was like one of my proudest moments of climbing, because I get to the top and people cheer. Like they're like, ah! Like, and I was like, I never got like applause for getting to the top of a climb. Not to mention like it was challenging for me. So I was like, oh, hell yeah. 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 And but on the like in the polar opposite, vice versa, I'm sitting there waiting for Cody to climb. And once in a while, I'm, you know, shooting some pictures and just sitting, chilling. But I'm just looking at the view. And at one point, I hear an entire crowd of people. All I hear is, like, throughout the valley. And I'm just like, what the hell? And I'm, like, looking around, like, what happened? And I look down. And Cody, who is almost at me, is back down to the base. I'm like, what's going on, buddy? And you go, like, just give me a minute.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause I think I took like a 10 minute break, but I had, the thing was, you were up there and we had two people down and we had to get the rope up so you could get down if anything. Cause we were only like one pitch up of a, like it was like a 4 or 5 pitch climb. We had a good amount of climbing to go. So I had to like, basically like get myself ready to climb it again on lead to get up to you. And I was like, not ready for that.
Yeah. Like hats off to Cody for doing that. Cause it's like he had to re-lead the rope because I'm basically stuck up there like an idiot. Like I don't have anything to get back down at that point. So Cody has to come back up. But not to mention the now there's one less piece of equipment on top of.
I might have put a cam in. I think I had an extra one maybe.
Okay. But still, still. You didn't have much equipment to supplement what I had already like spaced out. So
yeah.
Hats
off. I was so nervous.
Keep it together, I remember this because
there's like video. You took video like the second time I came up, and I remember just like looking. I looked at myself. And I was like, "Oh, I look scared," because I was like totally scared, not feeling it, like not wanting to climb. You know?
Wait, that sick picture I got of you stemming like this because you don't see your face. Yeah. But
so there I'm good, but then there's video. Like I get a little higher, and I remember like I think I still have it on my phone. You might have it too, but I remember just looking like terrified, just like not into it at all. But
fine, I'll try to put that up on YouTube. I'll put it in my notes here.
Oh yeah. A little.
If you guys want to see Cody crying while rock climbing, check it out on YouTube.
For sure.
All right.
Cool. But yeah. Good stuff.
Let's get into what's going on in our community. Sorry for the rock climbing sidetrack, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about the RSM training circle. If you guys haven't joined it, do it.
Yeah, Facebook group. It's our Facebook group. Just request to join. But yeah, so was it like 2 weeks ago, we came up with the RSM training challenge. And the first training challenge, this is the second. The second training challenge was a plank. So you're doing your max plank. And I guess, should we get into the results or should we?
Because
we
had let's get into the results, Cody, right?
We had like 8 people do it. I think we need more than that. We got
9. We actually got 9 or 10, okay. I think.
Right on.
But yeah, I put the scoreboard up. I went all the way to 9 for this one. So maybe from now on, if I don't have time, I'm only putting the top 3.
Top 3.
But yeah. So plank challenge. I should have the score so we can at least name the top 3, but yeah, I'll pull them up.
Okay.
But you talk about it.
But yeah, so plank challenge, I mean, we all know what a plank is. We're testing our core strength. So when I first, I thought of the challenge, I posted it on Sunday night or whatever, 2 weeks ago, I was thinking I'd be able to do like a 10 minute plank. Like I thought 10 minutes would be in my wheelhouse.
The record is like a day or like,
yeah, I think it's like a day. Yeah. It's like 18 hours or something. So I was like, I could do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I ended up, I was supposed to do it like early in the week, but we ended up going to the desert. And I did my challenge in the desert, just post climbing session, did it in the sand.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the fucking sand, Cody.
But we tried to live stream it, you know, I had Denise.
Oh, you tried?
Yeah. We had we were in like Arches National Park, you know? So,
yeah.
Actually kind of close to where we climbed that one time there. We were over that in the area.
Yep.
But yeah, so Arches National Park, gorgeous park in Utah, outside of Moab, but post climb, did the plank challenge in Birkenstocks. Live stream cut out though. I was trying to post it. Like we live streamed the whole thing, but the video wouldn't save. So I couldn't repost it. So like 30 people saw me do it.
So we're going to need people to write in these. I want to hear about these 30 people. No. I believe your number because you have integrity. Yeah. But what I want to talk about is I freaking think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm right. So you can't.
All right.
I think when you're in the sand, you're creating two trenches which lock your elbows in, and half of the plank, the difficulty is maintaining the elbows from slippage.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, I think so. I think so. Because the second I started my plank, and hats off to Cody, like he did do a phenomenal job. He did 5 minutes and 10 seconds, right?
And that's what you did.
I got 4 minutes and 35, but which
was pretty good. Second plank.
Yes, but I did it after you, and typically it is easier once you go second because you have a number to shoot for. But again, hats off to Cody because I wasn't able. I had his number of 5 minutes 10. I couldn't get to it.
I thought you were gonna get 5:12 or something. That's what I just imagined because that's usually how it goes, you know.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes. But but yeah, it was brutal. And that's the thing with these. So do please join our community RSM training circle because we're. These are kind of fun challenges, and you're going to see where people that are also training for elite military or just elite athletic trainings, you know, where they level with you.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. But, what the heck was I talking about? But yeah, so but there is integrity in these challenges. It's basically when you break form. Sure. You could probably hold a plank kind of form for longer, but with your back caved out or whatever, your butt up.
Yeah.
So it's definitely integrity filled challenges, but I think the sand, buddy, I'm a sore loser here. And I think the sand was locking your elbows in. Cause as soon as I got in my plank, I was like, dude, my deltoids are burning. Cause you gotta not get the slide in or out.
The thing is though, you could be right and we'll have to do it again, but I don't think you're right because the sand, you do slide a bit. I would say my deltoids were close to being my limiting factor there.
Oh yeah.
I was feeling it too, but you could be right. I can't confirm. We're gonna have to do it again.
Yeah. I'm probably wrong.
I was sliding a bit in the sand also. Cause it is the desert sand's pretty not a lot of friction there. You know, it's pretty fine.
True.
But I mean, you could be right, could be wrong. I don't know. We'll have to do it again.
But once you slid in, didn't you eventually build like a canal for your elbows?
There's definitely a little canal going.
Yeah.
I don't know if it holds your elbows there like you think it does. I don't know. Yeah.
I might be wrong.
Yeah, it was like a week ago anyway. So, but I mean, maybe next time I'll do it in the gym next time.
Yeah, you could do round two and be like, bitch, I did 10 minutes. It was like, way harder in the sand.
Yeah. And it was also like really, it was like hot as shit there. So like it was post, I did like, we climbed all morning and then I just like went out in the desert. I was like, let's do it here. But so yeah, I can't say, we'll have to do it again.
Yeah. Right on. Nevertheless, yeah. So good job. Top three for the Max Plank Challenge. We have Cody Wright, 5 minutes, 10 seconds. We have myself coming in second at 4 minutes, 35 seconds. And we have Scott Ruskin, I hope I pronounced that right,
at
3 minutes, 31 seconds. So nice job, Scott. Yes, and then awesome. The rest of the scoreboard, join our group, check it out.
Yeah.
And now for the new challenge, I like this one.
Yeah, this one's pretty new to me. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I like it.
Yeah. So this one's great. I called it, I don't think this exists like in the actual exercise world, as far as the name goes, but I call it the live hang. So if anybody's ever done a dead hang where you're just hanging on your loose limbs with like, you know, you're just basically hanging on a bar and you're trying to hang as long as possible. This is not that. This is a live hang. So I describe it as you need to engage like more or less every muscle. You can't be like hanging loose on any ligament. Your elbows have to have a slight bend. And your shoulders need to be activated, as in within the shoulder socket. So you're pulling up with the lats. Chest is engaged too. Your delts, of course. But you lose once your elbows are straight or your shoulders, you know, basically more or less meet your ears. Or as soon as your shoulders come out of their socket, you're not dislocating your shoulder, but like as soon as you're no longer engaged in that like ideal position, then you lose, and it's tough. It's tough. I did it.
So you actually did your full one yet already?
I did.
You're gonna wait to post?
No, I'll. You know what? I won't say the time because we want people joining this group. But I will post it. Hopefully today. So yeah, I won't say the time because I want people to go up there and see the time to beat, because yes, it is the highest time as of now.
I'm also realizing that this is next week's episode, so these people will already be in a new challenge.
Oh yeah, so
it's okay. We could. We're still just like talking about the group. But yeah, it'll be a new challenge when we post this podcast because we're
touche, my friend. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, go up there and I guess you'll see the live hang results on there. Yeah. So,
and maybe you've joined already because maybe you saw on Instagram or something. This is like,
yes. Yeah, buddy.
We'll see. And who knows what the new week's challenge will be. We'll think of it later.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to do that one. And yeah. I'm sure I won't win.
Cody, what do you know about nose breathing?
Nose breathing? Very little. They taught us it a little bit in A school, I remember.
Did they?
No, not nose breathing. It was just like they taught us how to like do controlled breathing, you know, like the five like deep breaths. But not nose breathing. So I don't know anything about nose breathing.
What do they teach us about five deep breaths?
It was like one of the instructors was big on like breathing method and stuff. And basically what you do is like try to like relax your heart rate. You do like five deep breaths. Like, so I think it was like breathe in for like, I want to say 5 seconds, hold it for 5 seconds, breathe out for 5 seconds, do it five times, like before like a multi or something. It's like a good way to calm your heart rate a little bit.
So oh, nice.
I used to do that actually. And it did work. But that's all I know about it. But that was nose breathing. That was just controlled breathing.
Well, that's one thing I teach in the Hold Your Breath Like a Helicopter Respiration program where, yeah, like you, like preparatory breathing is kind of similar. And typically, depending on your physical shape, you want to do a shorter inhale and a longer exhale. And oftentimes you double the exhale. And then as you build up your like apnea training, then you go into the 10 seconds as far as the exhale goes. And that really does calm your heart rate down, and that's what I always use when I'm free diving. So, but I want to talk about nose breathing, which I did a little research on after hearing the Joe Rogan podcast on that. And remember when we went out to the Wind River Range?
Yes, just sir.
Like recently, you know, we were hiking, what was it, like 9 miles or so with heavy packs.
It was like 10 miles and we had like 70 pound packs ish.
Yeah, roughly. it was brutal. And like, you know, that does, like, you're going uphill, you're kind of getting winded. And I was telling Cody, I'm going to practice the inhaling with my nose. And I think you could still exhale with your nose, but you can exhale with your mouth too.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as you're inhaling with the nose, I think it's the priority. And it's brutal. Like, but what the research has shown is that human beings were designed to utilize our nose for the inhales of any physical activity, even if that's like a sprint. And what that does is it's filtering. First of all, it's like filtering the air, and it's, I believe you get a more nutrient dense, in a sense, air in your system, even though you're getting technically less like air, you're getting more like oxygen and the things that you need in order to truly like get the benefits of your breath. So, and one of the things they were talking about in these articles is like a female sprinter who's one of the best sprinters in, I guess, in the Olympics or whatever. And if you see her, she looks like super calm when she's sprinting, but she's not calm, of course, but she's breathing in from her nose. And she's killing it. She's like destroying everyone. And most people aren't doing that. So I think studies are coming out about this like nose breathing. And when we were out there in Wyoming and I started doing that, it was like brutal. And that's what they were saying. It's like when you start nose breathing at first in high exertion situations, it's going to be rough, right? Because you're not accustomed to that. You're accustomed to big breaths of air through your mouth. And I've been fighting it for the past like whatever months. And now it is my go-to as far as like doing exercises. Even if I'm straining hard, I'm trying to breathe in from my nose. And I got to be honest, buddy, like I'm feeling a difference.
Really?
Yeah. Like I've been doing it even like if I run a little bit, like, and climbing and lifting. And yeah, I do feel like it's a more like rich way of like inhaling. I'm feeling, sure, less air is coming in, but I'm feeling more benefit from my breath.
Interesting. So you're doing it like the whole time or just like when you're in like certain moments of like high like exertion?
Well, you know, it is hard to like think. I don't think I'm a mouth breather on like day-to-day basis, but so I think in general, I gotta remind myself.
Yeah. Right?
But yeah, I'm mostly breathing in from my nose now on activities.
Nice. Yeah. I never really thought about it like consciously. I'm trying, like, next time I go for a run, I'll like actually try to think about how I'm breathing, but I feel like I definitely do like a mix of both, you know, so it's hard to tell, but
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. We should talk about that on a future podcast. Maybe you do the test yourself and tell people how you're breathing. Cause yeah, you're the cardio guy, right? I'm not that guy. So
yeah. Yeah, I'll try it out. We'll see. That's interesting, yeah. Though. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that you like your nose would be more efficient, I guess, because you have like, it's almost like a filter, you know, for like,
it is a filter. Well, yeah.
Maybe for bad air too. Like maybe it's like, if it's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think like a lot of little fine particles in the air, like you're kind of filtering out when you go through your nose. So that makes sense. Yeah. Especially with, well, I don't think it helps that much. Like maybe like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm feeling a benefit, but maybe it's the placebo effect.
No, I feel like that would help. I would, yeah.
That said, like, yeah, I mean, like, even firefighters can fight fires by breathing in through their nose instead of.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, you don't even need to wear a mask. Like, you're not going to get corona if you just breathe through your nose.
That's right. I found the cure.
Yeah.
It's Clorox and nose breathing.
Only breathe through your nose. You won't get corona. Yeah.
Yeah. Yo, let's talk about just catching up with folks. Let's talk about some of our previous guests. We had some amazing folks come on the podcast and thank you for doing so. Sarah came on, Sarah Faulkner. So we got some pushback about labeling her as the first Coast Guard helicopter rescue swimmer. There are previous I suppose, Coast Guard female rescue swimmers, but she was the first to graduate as out of the Coast Guard institution as the first female rescue swimmer. And she's a phenomenal person. That was a good talk.
There were some people saying we were kind of disrespecting the previous females who were rescue swimmers, but they didn't graduate from Coast Guard rescue swimmer school. So that was unintentional, I guess, is what we're trying to say.
But one of the things I kind of like that we talked about was her opinion on the first female Navy SEAL that's coming. Yeah. What do you think?
It was heated. See, I think it's one of those things that's going to happen. But I do see, like, I see both arguments, obviously, but, like, I do think it's eventually going to happen. Timeline, no idea. But I do see, like, I guess there are going to be problems with just, like, you know, like quarters. So like if you're like deployed somewhere and like maybe you're like deployed overseas, like in a war zone, like do you have to have separate like quarters where the female sleeps, like stuff like that, I could see being an issue. So it's going to be, I guess, kind of a hard sell or hard like logistically, but I do think it's probably going to happen. Right.
Yeah. Well, when you say it's heated debate, like it was funny because you posted a clip of the podcast on, was it TikTok or whatever? And the comments were quite interesting where folks were, you know, like the first comment was like, I don't think a female should be a Navy SEAL. And I'm like, oh, here it is. Yeah. Here we go. that like some of the points as I wrote down the read down the comment section was, you know, it's going to cost so much extra to manage having a female in the, are you on your phone?
I'm trying to pull up the comments so we can read them.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I wrote them down. I quoted them.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I got the most pertinent comments to this topic. So, so one of the points that somebody brought up is like, it's going to cost so much extra for, say, barracks, right? And my answer to that specific comment is that is complete bullshit. I mean, agreed, sure, there's going to be some higher expenditure for some accommodations, but if you've been in the military and you see how expenses are managed and like how much waste there is, trust me, the accommodations for a few females that are trying to go the elite military route is not your strongest argument, I think.
The argument is when you're deployed in a war zone, you know, and you're close quarters, stuff like that. I think that's the argument for that. Because I don't think anyone's maybe some people are, that it's going to cost more, but let's be real. Like, no, I mean, the military has a lot of money.
So you think the point is actually logistics?
I think it's logistics overseas. So like, say if you're in a war zone, like whatever, say you're deployed somewhere in whatever, North Africa, and there's like some operation they're doing, and it's like they're like spending multiple days like fighting or like planning an operation, and like they're generally going to be sleeping in the same area, maybe just like on a floor somewhere, like some house that they have. How are they going to deal with it there, you know, stuff like that? Which I mean, obviously, like that's a pretty good point, but I have no idea, obviously.
And that's certainly probably, you know, there's high testosterone and, you know, high stress. And I'm assuming like, yeah, sex could certainly be something that like could come up. But then again, like these special forces, you know, they're professionals. So I don't know. That's a good point, I suppose.
Yeah, but I do think it's going to happen. And I honestly, I don't like, I'm not like for or against it. I just want to, like, if it happens, it happens. Like, because they are sending like females through the pipeline, right?
Yeah. I've seen some. Yep. That's gonna be a big news day. And another one of the points I read in the comments was, what happens if she gets pregnant?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think that's either. Like, also,
that's not a huge issue, I feel like, because they'll just be like, they'll pull you out of training or whatever, or they'll pull you out of like your operational duty.
Well, all right. Well, to give you like the opposing point to that, I suppose, is but dude, specifically like Navy SEALs, how much money are they investing in that training, right? And it's not just the money. It's also the fact that you're an asset that they would need at that point if they've invested that much time into you. So if you're getting pregnant, then, well, A, you're off the bare minimum, pretty much a year, to be honest. Like if that's like your situation, on top of that, you have a kid and, you know, you're probably want to take care of it. Probably want to take care of him or her. Yeah. so yeah, there is that, but totally. I don't think that's the biggest concern either. You get pregnant, you're on birth control or whatever. There's some.
It's one of those things you just like, I don't even know, like, I'm sure there's like periods in history where women were fighters, right? Like there has to be like some sort of like, I don't know. Like it'd be interesting to like read. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm going to say no, there's no culture where women, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to stick my neck out and say there's no culture out there where the women were the fighters. Prove me wrong.
No, not specifically just the women, but maybe like more of a mix or like certain women. But
oh well, yeah.
I actually want to do some research on that. And like that'd be interesting to know about, you know, like if there were certain cultures or like, because there's got to be some reference to it at some point, you know, like at some point in history, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious. And then the last point, of course, that always comes up is, and I'm just gonna quote it here: when men put themselves in danger, would men put themselves in danger to save her? It's men's nature to protect women.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that's another one you can't really answer. But I also feel like they just do that for everyone. Like, you know, typically like those units are like super tight knit. So like typically someone steps in front and like, you know, helps another person in need out, no matter gender. But there's no examples, so it's hard to tell, you know.
I agree with you. I think they're professionals. I think they're able to put the sex aside as far as that goes. And honestly, a problem could come in the form of, yeah, like Sarah was mentioning, it could be hard and there could be some sense of entitlement or as far as like the men feeling like, hey, like this first seal, she shouldn't be here. There's a chance it wouldn't happen as well. But there's a chance that could happen. And if that's the case, it could be the opposite effect of, you know, there's a little resentment there and they would offer less help to this.
Oh, maybe yeah.
Peer there. But totally I think the more realistic reality is that they're professionals, and and regardless of the sex, they're gonna do their job.
I agree. And then the thing is, like, we always, this is like for everything, any event ever, we always make it a way bigger deal than it is gonna end up being. So like, because we just like extrapolate what we think is gonna happen, and then it happens, and we're like, oh, it's not that big a deal. So that's probably, like, realistically, that's probably what it's going to be like, if I had to guess.
It's going to be rough for that first female Navy SEAL, and not because she made it through, like, one of the hardest grueling trainings known to America. But also because of all the PR that's going to come behind it, and all the freaking pressure and comments, and it's going to have to be a strong person.
Pretty insane. Yeah. So.
Yeah. The other thing Sarah talked about on our previous podcast is Navy rescue swimmers. What are your thoughts on Navy rescue swimmers?
My thoughts, I mean, they seem okay. I've never met one. I've heard a lot of stories. Basically, from what I've heard is like, it's like their secondary job in the Navy. So like you join to be a Navy rescue swimmer, but you end up doing mostly like air crew on a helicopter, flying around aircraft carriers, and not a lot of rescue swimming.
Well, what Sarah mentioned is, yeah, basically the main duty as far as the rescue swimmer portion of the Navy job, like the Navy rescue swimmers, like when they're actively being Navy rescue swimmers, is, yeah, they're basically patrolling aircraft carriers for other aircraft landings in case, you know, one goes down, then the rescue swimmer deploys and gets the pilots out or whoever the air crew is on that aircraft. And that reminded me that, yeah, that was why I decided to also not join the Navy, is because with my research is like, yeah, they don't really get many cases, and it's more of a patrolling job slash side gig. And we could be wrong, but you know, I would love to hear from, actually, we have somebody on there, our RSM training circle, that mentioned she was going Navy rescue swimmer.
There's a few people. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, one of them that I read, she said, you know, I think she said my father was a Navy rescue swimmer.
Yeah.
Yes. And maybe that's why she's more encouraged to go down that route versus the Coast Guard rescue swimmer route. But I am curious as to, you know, as far as like the job goes, what makes you pick Navy rescue swimmer over Coast Guard rescue swimmer?
Yeah. Cause in my mind, they're not the same, you know, like I think, I don't know if people think of them as the same when they're trying to join a service, but in my mind, it's not the same. Like for the Coast Guard, like the swimmer is like a premier job. And for the Navy, it's not a premier job. You know, like the Navy, if you're like, they're like premier jobs going to be, you know, like Navy SEAL or like, what was it? The SWIC, those response, like basically they're like, bosun's mates who are really good. They drive it. Like, I think they drive like SEALs into like insertion points and stuff like that. That's like their tactical, like boat driver. Those are like the premier jobs when I think of the Navy. I don't think of a rescue swimmer as being like one of those, you know. But, and I also like, we can't speak on the training that they go through. I've heard that ours is harder, but obviously like never been through the Navy one, so I can't say certainly, but
yeah.
And I also would have to look at graduation rates and stuff like that, you know.
So. Oh yeah, I'm curious about that. Like, who is the attrition rate higher in the Navy?
Yeah,
interesting. But yeah, hit us up, you know, in wherever on social media, Rescue Swimmer Mindset, wherever you want to hit us up.
But the and let us know. Navy, they give you a giant bonus.
Oh, do they? I
think you get like $40,000 if you get a swimmer contract.
All right.
So yeah. If you want that bonus, Coast Guard does not do bonuses.
Oh, they do, but I think it's for other jobs than ours.
They actually do, you're right, but I don't think they're doing 40K bonuses.
I don't know. I think they're pretty desperate for food services.
It's actually shocking that they wouldn't give swimmers like a bonus too, because they're always desperate for swimmers.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is.
Yeah. Who knows? I'm sure they got their reasons.
I think, yeah, but I don't think they're desperate for swimmer candidates. I think they're desperate. They're desperate for graduates, but you know, there's enough people going through the pipeline, if you will, that that they're not desperate. They're like, well, if we have enough, but it's just hard to get them to make it through or something. Maybe.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
One thing I've heard recently, Navy SEALs are going gender neutral.
Wait, what?
Navy SEALs going gender neutral, as in like they have to address, I believe they have to address one another, like as in like they.
And, no way.
From my understanding, that's basically what's going on now.
I've not heard that, but
yeah. and from what I've hear is the thing with those like decisions, right, of like going gender neutral is, all right, well, first of all, yeah, you're kind of, it's probably an officer's decision. And I don't know if you experienced this, Cody, but often in the military, it seems like whenever you have like a new officer in a new position, right, the first thing they want to do is change things.
100%.
And like one of the things that they were talking about actually on the Joe Rogan podcast is like, all right, so the problem is like a lot of the decisions that are made are like me based decision. And it's these career military folks that are going, that they're just shooting for a promotion. And the best way to do that is by changing things. And then you put that in your marks or whatever, in like your achievements, like, hey, look, I did this. I changed the system in this way. Right. And I think the kind of the issue that comes with doing that is sometimes it's so stupid. Like you're just
if we're like, let's think this through. Like, I mean, I don't know. That's like, this is like, it really stinks of like a political agenda slash like a little bit of like academia, like throwing itself in there, you know? Cause it's like, I remember like, I mean, you know, we just both recently graduated from college, but that was something that was, you could see it coming down the pipe in college classes too, you know, because like every time I remember when I went to college in 2011, you know, you just introduce yourself, like, hey, this is first day of class, introduce yourself and tell like everyone in the class what you're doing or like what your like big hobby is or something, right? Like that's kind of how it was. And then like this round through, like it was like introduce yourself and then tell everyone your preferred like gender pronoun, and then it was like tell your hobby too, you know. So it was like an extra step. And then I'm like, and that kind of sounds like now the Navy's kind of doing that too, but I don't know. When it comes to stuff like Navy SEALs and like when you're talking about like military units like that, I don't know if there's a place for that stuff, you know. It's just like, because it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that stuff.
Yeah.
In the military, you know, it's,
yeah. And one of the things that like kind of, so yeah, Joe Rogan, they were just talking to the coffee boys there, which we just did last week. Yeah. We have our own coffee boy.
Yeah, we got the coffee boy.
Yeah, we got Caleb. Caleb Flippin, thank you for coming on. And yeah, they were talking about, yeah, kind of that flaw in the system of a lot of me leadership. And those are typically the people that are retained in the military. And that, I was kind of reminded of that talking to Sarah a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, like it often seems like, and I've heard this a lot, and they talked about it on that podcast, is the retention of good, you know, guys and girls who serve is oftentimes very low in correlation to the me and the professional, like career driven, or sorry, like the career driven, like only professional progression folks. And yeah, that's, I hope that's something that's kind of changing over time. But you know, like, so Jocko Willing, like great leader, and he leads classes in leadership, but I certainly, from my understanding, yeah, he's not that kind of person that throws like his team under the bus for his own promotion. Yet that does tend to happen quite a bit in the military, from things I've witnessed and from a lot of stories that are told, you know.
Yeah,
not so much in the aviation world though, sometimes yes, but like you weren't on a cutter, but you know, cutter life is something, you know. It's a lot of politics.
I can't imagine.
Other thing I wanted to talk about is real quick jujitsu, because we talked about that last week with Caleb. And sorry, Caleb, I keep calling you Caleb because I'm just terrible with names. Yeah, yeah, it's the Canadian tourists, like terrible pronouncing things sometimes. Yeah, so Caleb Flippin, we were talking about jiu-jitsu coming into the rescue swimmer job. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. See, I don't know anything about jiu-jitsu, but it sounds like they're trying to just like, yeah, because I mean, when we go through swimmer school, you know, you learn the pressure points, how to get survivors off you. And I mean, I've never actually had to use those in real life, only just training. So I can't speak to their effectiveness, but it sounds like they're not that effective and usually just comes down to like throwing them off you. So, I mean, if you're using jiu-jitsu and like actual like martial arts, it probably is a better idea.
Can you imagine somebody comes up to you in the street, like, and he's like, give me your wallet. And you're like, and they grab you and you're like, let me do my rescue swimmer moves on this guy. Yeah.
It's like this weird pressure points that only work if you're like approached by a certain direction. Like there's no side rest. Like if someone comes at you from the side, there's no escape for that.
You make a point, but yeah, but you could always it's front and back the training, but like you could always twist to your front.
You could, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know, like it just seems like very like manual oriented. When jiu-jitsu seems like it'd be way more, I guess, effective.
True.
And
fluid. Well, one of the best tactics a rescue swimmer has like in their pocket too is like you don't get in a situation where you get grabbed by a panicking or hostile survivor. You just You assess him like from afar, from a distance, because he can't swim as fast to you as you can swim away from him, yeah. Likely. or if so, he's like a proficient swimmer and he doesn't need you yet. So at that point, like one of the best thing you got in your tool belt is, you know, you assess, you tell him to calm down. But if he's not, then we do the sneak attack, you know? Cody, tell people about the sneak attack.
The underwater approach, the sneak attack. It's so when you see all like, the Coast Guard videos, like is the A school videos. But you just like basically you just like go underwater like a freaking dolphin. You go underneath them and you look like you go underneath them and you're looking at them like as you swim under them. And then you basically just approach from the back. You like shoot up and get them in the back and then get them into a controlled, like, what do they call it? Like, it's basically just into a buddy toe. But yeah, that's a sneak attack.
Yeah, I love it. And approach. I love that we worked with a Green Beret that was in the Navy, or sorry, the rescue swimmer shop. And yeah, it was fun because talking to him about, you know, I was talking to him about like combat, and he was telling me like, dude, if we don't have the upper hand, we did something wrong. If like if we're not cheating in a, like, there's no such thing as a fair fight. Fuck that. Like, if we're in a fair fight, we significantly screwed up our planning. The whole point is that we have the upper hand. Like, there's nothing, like, if the guy, there's no such thing, like, in the movies, like, it's going to be a fist-to-fist fight. Like, no. If there's a fucking stick nearby, I'm using the stick and I'm going to, like, beat you to crap. Like, find a weapon, find the advantage. And that's kind of like, yeah, that's like our tactic. It's like, we're not going to go in for the pressure points if we can just sneak attack.
Sneak attack. The underwater, otherwise known as the underwater approach.
Yeah, but I'm going to call it sneak attack.
Can you imagine you're like an instructor at a school? You're like, all right, guys, time to learn the sneak attack. It's a little sneaky approach. They're just like, what?
The instructor just comes in the classroom. He's like, shh, I'm sneak attack day. Follow me.
I feel like that's what I would do if I was an instructor.
Yeah. And that's why you're not an instructor. All right. Yep. What else do we want to talk about today?
I wanted to talk a little bit about some training goals, you know, personal training goals. You know, we talk all about the military training, and we kind of are not in the military anymore, so we don't have those goals. So what is your deal? What's you training for? Like, what's your big 6-month goal right now? It could be, you know, it could be climbing related. It could be like mountaineering.
Yeah, put some pressure. I would like to climb proficiently and safely a WI-4, and if I'm feeling proficient, 5. So for all you guys who don't know what that is, that's in ice climbing. It's called a waterfall, and that's like the number is the grade of difficulty. So last season, I did do some WI-3s. I was doing a lot of soloing, which means like no rope, because a lot of times I was alone, because not many people want to ice climb. It's a stupid sport.
Ice climbing sucks, honestly. I hate
it. But it makes me feel cool. I call it like roofing in Russia. Like, because nice. You got little ice hammers and you just...
Yeah, yeah.
one thing I was thinking of, like, because again, I was doing a lot of soloing, and I was on a multi-pitch once soloing, and like out in the biggest mountain in New Hampshire, Mount Washington.
Nice.
And I was doing this like climb, and I had done it earlier in the season, which at that point it was like big, it was kind of a bigger deal. But I remember being on the rope with my buddy, like top roping it, and being like, dude, I could solo this. And sure enough, at the end of the season, I decided to go do that. And it was a little maybe pushing it, probably not the smartest move. But I remember thinking like, yo, this isn't like climbing soloing. Like, I was up there and it was kind of thin ice, and I was thinking, yo, if I drop one of these ice tools, they call them, like an ice pick, what? Like, now what? Like, because there's no such thing as ice climbing with one ice pick if you're on like a vertical surface, because you're not gonna like undo your one point of securing your upper body to the wall and just like dynamically go for the next stab into the ice.
No way.
Yeah, you're like, well, I mean, you might have to at that point, but like, you're good luck. Like, good luck surviving that. So,
are those ice picks? Do you have like a little, like, I've never ice climbed, and I don't really like, I don't see myself getting into it, but maybe I will one day. But is there like a little, like, you know, like, have you played Nintendo Wii? There's like the little thing that connects to your wrist. Like, do you have that?
That's actually. Yo, I bet you did. No, okay, so there is a leash, and that's where I was getting at, is like, I started figuring, like, if I'm fucking, sorry for cursing, but like, if I'm soloing, like, as in no rope, I should definitely have a leash. So I remember like the last times I did it, I had a little leash, and it goes to your harness though, which is kind of weird if you're soloing with a harness, which I was. But yeah, so it connects to your harness. But that sounds like I'm sure they have that where it just connects to your wrist, because you don't need. Yeah. Oh no, here's the deal. You don't want it to connect to your wrist because sometimes you swap over which ice axe, like you'll cross and you switch like which hand you're holding, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So that wouldn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, sorry to sidetrack. But yeah, basically I would like to, as the winter comes, do one. Because I actually soloed by accident a WI4, but it was the sketchiest thing in my life.
The grading system, so what is that? Like, how high does it go? Because I'm not, like, where I'm used to climbing, but not, you know.
I'm still so new. I want to say it goes up to WI6, maybe.
So, like, seven. A 4 would be, like, equivalent, like, so, like, 512 is, like, you know, in climbing, that's, like, you're, like, expert level climbing.
No, I would say like four would be maybe high 11s to 12s in rock climbing world.
Pretty substantial. Yeah, pretty hard.
Yeah. But that's the thing with ice climbing, like just ice climbing itself. It's like if the grade gets harder, it's not like because the moves per se are that much harder. It's because it gets sketchier.
Oh, like the ice gets better? Like,
yeah, because ice at most is going to hang vertically, right? Like overhung right ice is like. The only times you see that is if you're climbing in, like, you know, Antarctica or like in a on the inside of a glacier, you know. So you never really overhung ice climbing, right?
Right.
It's usually vertical. So as the grades get harder, it's because it's getting thinner, it's getting sketchier. Sometimes like it becomes a mixed route where you got to use the ice picks on little rock, so you're using that. So that's kind of how the grading system goes up. It kind of goes up in the sketchiness sometimes. I would label it.
Gotcha.
So yeah, but yeah, so I soloed one, but that was sketchy as hell, and I got frostbite. I was so scared that I couldn't, or like I was so pushing my limits like in an idiotic way. And there's a video of that, like I made a really cute dumb video posted on Instagram on Wildertainment if you guys want to check it out. And yeah, like I actually got frostbite on my fingertips because I was pushing my limits so much I couldn't like put blood back into my hands by shaking it out because I was gripping so hard. And the thing is, like, it was such a cold day, right? Like, my beard was freezing up. My eyes were freezing shut because, like, some of the ice was falling in my eyes. So I couldn't really see. It was pushing my limits. Yeah, on a solo. And it was, like, it was a short route, kind of. But it was, like, the second pitch. So if I fell, I would hopefully fall onto, like, a ledge and not tumble off the face of the cliff. But, yeah, it was, like, it wasn't the smartest move. I thought I had it. And then once I was engaged, I was kind of committed.
Right.
And yeah, I was like, so I had to just fight my way through it, but I didn't have enough energy or composure to put blood back into my fingertips. And I got like frostbite on my fingertips. And, you know, be careful guys. If you're doing like any winter activities, like, you know, it is easy to get frostbite. And once you get it, yeah, it sucks. Like now, like whenever it's cold, I lose that, like, the blood in the fingertips, and I gotta do some maintenance on that. So be careful. It sucks. It's like easy to happen. It was only over the period of like 10 minutes climbing this thing. But now it's a thing I gotta deal with, you know?
Dang. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Sounds what are you working on?
So I guess two goals for the 6 month period, not even 6 months. I would say by next, like by the spring, you know? So here's goal number one is I want to run a marathon in like under 3 hours. So hopefully in February, I'm going to try to do the Austin Marathon. I wanted to do it last year. Ended up getting hurt my leg. So I didn't run. I dropped out. So yeah, want to do like a sub 3 hour marathon. And that's like a 6:45 minute per mile pace, or 6:50 per mile minute pace for 26 miles, you know? So pretty fast, but not like, I mean, that would like, I guess like, I'm trying to think. You would qualify for like the Boston Marathon, but it's not considered like super fast, you know, like, but it's pretty hard to do. That's goal number one. So I'm going to keep working on that. And then, oh yeah. If you're on Strava, I know, are you on Strava? Did you join the group, Vince? No, there's a Strava.
But I will.
So if you guys use Strava, guys and girls, if you use Strava, we have a Rescue Summer Mindset Strava group now. So there's like, I think there's like 15 people in the group, probably a little more. Whenever this posts, so get in the group. It's good stuff. But yeah,
what's Strava though? Like, explain.
Oh, Strava is like it's basically like an endurance / like, well, no, I would just say it's like a social media workout app. So it's almost like Facebook. So you do like a workout. So if you like, go on a run, you just stream, like you log the run. So it's like, if you're using your Garmin or whatever, you're just like, you just like sync it to your watch or like use the app in your phone, do your run. And then when you finish, it uploads to the Strava app, and then you can do like a little write up on it. And then you just post it, and then you have friends and you can like comment and like stuff. So it's basically like a Facebook for like athletes. You can log weightlifting, stuff like that, rock climbing, all that. So we got a group, there's people in there. You should join.
You can log weightlifting on Strava?
Yeah. Yeah. You just do, it says like, but you can put it as, there's like a cardio, not cardio. It's like, I think it just says like workout, like indoor workout, and it just logs your heart rate and stuff like that. And then you can just like, it shows you that you were lifting like on your activity.
Oh, but there's no ranking.
There's no ranking for lifting. Yeah, it's not like
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah. Because I was like, that'd be weird. Like, what do you find out like where your back squatting or your front squatting ranks in like your county? That'd be fun. That'd be kind of
funny. Yeah, because it also like Strava's cool in that, especially for running it and biking, like cycling, it has little segments. So like maybe like there's this 1 mile stretch outside your house. There'll be like a segment for that someone made, and it ranks you how fast you went on that segment. And then puts you like in the category, you know, like, and then if you're top 10, you get like a little crown, or like you get a trophy if you're top 10. And if you're number one, you get a little crown. So it's kind of fun, makes it super competitive, especially
how many crowns you got. How many crowns you got, Cody?
Yeah. So it's pretty fun. Trying to think, but yeah, if you want to do that, it's cool. Cause you can see like what everyone's up to. So like, you can see what I'm doing like daily for working out. I'm going to try to log my like lifts and stuff more just so people can see that.
Nice. What's your crown stats, dude?
Crown stats are decent. They're pretty decent. I got in Boulder, not so much. I have a couple Boulder crowns for some running segments, but usually it's like if you're in Boulder, like you're not going to get any crowns because everyone's so fast here. Everyone's like a pro athlete basically. But yeah, go back to the East Coast, get some crowns, and come back.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of crowns to be had in South Dakota.
Oh yeah, probably a lot of crowns up there. Squamish, I'm assuming there's a lot of good athletes, so probably hard to get crowns up there.
yeah, trail running's pretty big. I hear around.
Yeah.
Wait, so that was your one goal was the marathon in sub 3 hours, you said?
Sub 3 hours. That's the goal. So I'm going to try to do that in the Austin Marathon in February.
What's goal two?
Goal two is 12A trad climb. Send to 12A.
Within 6 months?
Within 6 months. So hopefully by the spring.
Nice. Are you eyeing one?
No, I don't have any eye, but I'm just like hopping on as many like 511s as I can to kind of build that kind of like that base. So
yeah.
What I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to like pick one that's like kind of suits me, you know? So,
oh yeah.
Well, you know, like I want to find one that's like, I'm kind of going to cheat it and like find one that's like good for my kind of climbing style. And hopefully, but I mean,
and also course, like one that you should pick one that's inspiring that, yeah, you think you would like it's in your style. Cause you kind of like that. But, and also depending on, I mean, I bet you won't even have to work on it that hard. But you know, it might be smart to pick one that's accessible. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I was thinking about hopping on. What's that one you always talk about? Did you send that one in Indian Creek in the desert? What's that
one? Oh yeah, but that's like a drive.
That's
for you, right?
Minus, right?
Yeah. Dude, good luck, dude. You would hate that one. Wait, I don't know. You might like. Well, because so it's called. Oh my god, how did I forget? I
always Rambo? Talk
about it. Yeah, Way Rambo. And so this is a crack climb in the desert and.
That's what
I think why you might hate it is because I never seen you do it, but like it's finger locks, buddy. Like, so finger locks, anybody who's checking in on YouTube, it's where you put your thumb like horizontally in a crack and you put your fingers over it. And then, well, yeah, you got to like twist your elbow, but like it hurts.
Yeah.
And, like you're creating like pressure on the bone of your thumb.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't know about that.
And then on top of that, in this climb, you got to like, then you go vertical and it's like kind of a boulder last move. It's brutal. Oh, yeah. And it's a hike. It's a, like, first of all, if you go to Indian Creek, which was what, like 4 hours for you at least?
It's like six. Yeah.
Six. And then on top of that, that's not like, you got to drive to that climb. I think it's like 30 minutes at least. Or
yeah. See, that's probably not going to happen.
And then the hike, it's not like, it's not a hard hike, but it's like not the closest hike.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of annoying to get to. Yeah. I'll probably not do that. So
yeah.
But that would just be kind of messed up anyways.
Nah, it'd be funny. You should, I sent your pride.
Yeah.
Those
are the goals.
Yeah, that's cool. Your girlfriend's been killing it too, huh? As far as like climbing goes.
Yeah, she climbs pretty hard. She's getting on some trad stuff too, like climbing She climbed a nine, some nines, trad. So
heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trad climbing, y'all, is like, again, where you put that fancy gear in instead of clipping a bolt, because a lot of climbs are like almost recreational to the point where it's just a bolt and you clip it and it's nice, easy.
Yeah.
But Cody's talking about putting in its own protection, the natural stuff.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about this outdoor stuff, you know, I mentioned before that I'm going to be coming out with a basically a subcategory podcast, if you will, and it's called Wildertainment. So the first part of the word wilderness and the second part of the word entertainment, Wildertainment. Oh. Cody hates that word. I'm not going to say why. But anyway, yeah, I'm very excited to bring to you guys this new podcast. I already recorded. I gotta just work on like posting it, because it's all right. The first episode, bear with me, is not the best episode because it's just me, and I don't know. I'm not used to just, I don't know, like running rambling. I'm not like Bill Burr. I can't, like, it's hard to run a podcast like the first one on your own. So the first one, I didn't have a guest, but it's basically explaining what the Wildertainment podcast is, and just so I can do that really briefly here. We're basically going to have conversations about entertaining wilderness-based adventures. And that's often going to come in the form of survival stories. So what we haven't talked about too much in the Rescue Swimmer Mindset is the fact that Cody and I were aviation survival technicians. So, and that's like one of the things that rescue swimmers do. You know, we have training in survival methods. And that's kind of what I wanted to dive into, is like the survival aspect of things, but not just keeping it to that. We want to expand it to just people that are pushing it in outdoor environments, pushing their physical limits, their mental limits, going on, you know, big adventures. So there's going to be all kinds of sport. There's going to be climbing, of course, there's going to be mountaineering, but there's going to probably be some like bikers, some trail runners. I want to talk to you about I'm a hint at it. I want to talk to you about your mountain lion attack story.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So there's going to be wildlife, you know, interactive stories. And it's basically just going to be anything that relates to the wilderness. And that's, you know, a challenge. And, I've already had two guests on, so they're going to be coming out. My goal is to post them every week, and I already have two guests, and our first guest, incredible person, and she survived a helicopter crash in Utah, and basically the helicopter tumbled down a mountain. And Cody, I gotta say, like, I'm not trying to like sell it here, like, that was seriously probably the best story I've ever had, like, heard. It's insane, like, what she went through. It just keeps getting worse and worse. It's like a movie, but like worse. Like, they wouldn't even show that in Hollywood, because you're like, eh, it's too much. It's too much.
It's too real.
Yeah. And like, I honestly discussed at the beginning of the podcast, I'm like, listen, I'm not being cute here. Like, it's kind of gory. It's a gruesome story. And I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to it, but kind of be prepared if you're not the type of person that's used to hearing that kind of stuff. So we have one of those guests. Another guest I'm having on is two New Zealanders, one of which fell like six stories into an ice crevice in the mountains of New Zealand.
So these are going to be good. Yeah. I'm excited for these. What's your timeline like? When do you think that the first one come out in the next few weeks?
Probably
or so?
Next week. No, first one's going to come out. I'm shooting for next week. So
cool.
That'll be the intro one. And then the helicopter crash one has already been recorded, but that will be out in 2 weeks, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. And as far as our future guests on this podcast, we're going to have a nutritionist. So because we haven't talked about the diet aspect of elite military trainings, or if you're just doing any athletic endeavor. And that's what's cool about nutrition. It keeps evolving, right? So we're going to talk to somebody about like how they think you should be eating for these kind of objectives. So that's going to come up next week. And we have other cool ones too. I have a good friend of mine who, this is probably, he's the best storyteller I know. So it's going to be entertaining as hell. And he's going to probably be a recurring guest because I love the guy. I love having conversations with him. It's the most entertaining talks. It's better than watching a movie. And I was in helicopter rescue swimmer school with him. But the guy's, dude, the guy's a maniac. The guy's out of his mind. Like some of the things he's done is, I think he tried to he's got no, like minimal to no boat experience. He tried to take a boat from, I think, Washington to Alaska.
That's unreal.
Like a skiff. And dude, he's like the definition of a, like an insane entrepreneur. And he even went to like to the Middle East. I think he wanted to do like a bike ride. That's what he did. And yeah, he served like, he served in combat out there, like security. So
really,
that's Josh Latuka. So he'll be on in the future weeks, and I'm excited for those because
that's gonna be cool. Yeah, we'll definitely throw a bunch of like Instagram posts, try to get that out there, because I think these are gonna be super entertaining.
So check out our new guests coming up, and then check out the Wildertainment podcast. So again, Wildertainment. Check that out on Instagram. You can follow that, and then I'll be posting about like the future episodes and whatnot, and then it'll be on YouTube as well under Wildertainment. So yeah, anything else for this week?
I think that's it. We should try to I mean, I think that's all we got. We can talk about some of the stuff we got going on at RSM, just products and stuff.
Yeah,
before we get now,
first of all, if you'd like to donate to the podcast, please do so. Go to the rescueswimmermindset.com under donations. 20% goes to the Coast Guard families in need. And it helps us out in developing this podcast and keeping it afloat. And because otherwise, we're probably eventually going to go down the advertisement route. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do reads.
Yeah. You know? It is nice. Like, not having to like put ads in the show. And then I guess the only ads are kind of our ads for our products and then donations. So we'll try to keep it like that as long as we can, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, we got your course. We talked about it a little bit with the nose breathing, you know, how to hold your breath like a helicopter rescue swimmer. That course, I mean, I think that's probably our, as far as like interactive courses go, that's probably the best one we got, you know, like,
yep.
You want to like talk a little bit about it?
I talked about it last week, but I'll mention it again. And if you're watching on YouTube, I'm currently putting a video that's showing you how it's broken down and like all the video courses, but I believe it's in the range of 11 courses, 11 like basically interactive video courses. So I'm your instructor. I'm teaching you everything that I wish I knew going through helicopter rescue swimmer school, and I wish I knew to perform better in underwater challenges, because that's the most challenging part of any elite military training, is surviving the underwater. So surviving and overcoming the mental challenges, but also expanding your lung capacity, becoming more fluid underwater and cutting through the water in a more efficient manner, the specific strokes that you should be utilizing to be proficient, drills that like you should be practicing as far as, you know, bettering your water confidence, as well as apnea training tables, which that's really where you're going to expand like your time of being able to hold your breath. So again, that is the Hold Your Breath Like a Helicopter Rescue Swimmer course that is on our website, therescueswimmermindset.com /breathe. So if you just type in /breathe after Rescue Swimmer Mindset, you'll come up with that program. So check that out. And it includes for now we'll keep it included within the program, but it's basically a book. So you have the course broken down into a book, and we were wrong. I think we talked about it last week, but it's 36 pages, I think.
Okay.
36 pages of condensed material that is covered in the course. But if you want to read it and look over the tables, that's all within the book that's included within the program. So rescueswimmermindset.com/breathe.
Cool. Yeah. Let's
talk about your
part. A couple of different ones. There's a couple things. So Win the Summer is Win the Summer, I guess, is a little outdated at this point because we're in October. But our training, strength and conditioning program, Win the Summer, is one that we both wrote together. You know, we have, basically I wrote most of the strength and like PT workouts and running, and then you wrote all the pool workouts. And I think, I forget, we we kind of like came together and wrote some of the PG stuff together. But basically what it is like 8 weeks of training specifically for people trained to be rescue swimmers, Navy SEALs, or PJs. So it's 5 days a week. You're doing, you know, strength conditioning, trying to improve your PT numbers, and you're doing pool stuff. I think pool 2 times a week, and then conditioning and strength training 3 times a week. So win the summer. It's a great program. Just go to rescuemindset.com/win the summer. There's a video on there. You can watch the video, kind of see what it's about. We're working out in the video, you know, getting some pushups in. There's also a beginner and advanced version. So if you buy the program, basically what you can do is download the beginner one, which is 8 weeks, and the advanced one, which is another 8 weeks. And if you feel like you need to skip over the beginner and just get into harder workouts, you can do that. But if you want to start at the beginner section, you can do 8 weeks, and then you can switch to the advanced version. It's a whole nother set of workouts that are a little bit harder and going to be, you know, they're going to just build on that first 8 weeks.
Right. And so at that point, you're basically getting 4 months worth of training.
Yeah.
So you kind of write that off. You just do our training and follow the recipe. You know,
it's pretty nice. Yeah. It's $80. And you can even, if you don't want to pay $80 up front, you can pay 2 payments of $40 a month, for each month, you know, each month of training. Yeah. Well, yeah, 2 months, and then you have four months of training though.
Yeah.
We also got a new run program. And this is one I wrote myself, just cause I'm kind of like at RSM, I'm more of the run guy. Vince does most of the pool stuff. So I wrote a run program, and it's called 1.5 mile time run training. And it's, if you're looking to decrease your run time, basically just buy this program and follow the workouts. It's 8 weeks, and it's only run training based around building your aerobic base and increasing your leg turnover for, you know, I think, you know, the SEALs do the 1.5 mile run. We do 1.5. PJs do it. And then some of the other trainings do like 1 to 4 mile runs, but this one's specifically for people. So if you're a PJ, Navy SEAL, rescue swimmer training, you're going to want to take this course. You can stack on top of other training courses. So if you're taking someone else's strength conditioning program, you can just add this on top, like add these run workouts into that training and just supplement the run workouts in that program for this one. So that is, let's see the link for that real quick. It's going to be rescuesummermindset/runningwithRSM. And we'll put the link in the show notes.
Yep. One more time. What was it?
It's going to be rescuesummermindset.com/runningwithRSM.
Running with RSM. Got it. Yes. I didn't know Navy SEALs did 1.5 miles. That's cool.
Yeah, they do.
I thought they just did like brutal, like,
yeah, it's just
sand
like
runs.
I think that's what they do once they're in, but I think their entrance test is just like their entrance test is at the 1.5. But then when you're in like Buds or whatever, it's like, I think their big one is the 4 mile, like 4 mile, like sand run they do in boots.
Brutal.
I wouldn't know anything about that. That is brutal.
It sounds terrible. Like,
it really does.
Why you have to run in boots? Well, because you're wearing boots out there. That's brutal. Yeah. Is that with a pack? No. No, but it is in boots.
No, they don't do it. They just do it like with their camo, like their I don't know what they call their pants, and then like a white t-shirt, boots.
It's an operational uniform type thing.
Kind of, yeah, what they do all their training in.
You know what the coolest thing about Navy SEALs are? Their shirts.
Their shirts?
You know the like the operational shirt I'm talking about? I know there's a name. I don't know it. Sorry. But yeah, where like the sleeve's like a different color, and like the chest is like a light beige. That's the coolest shirt I've ever seen in my life.
I've seen some of the Coast Guard units have those, like the ones who do like the it's like a certain type of tactical shirt that like all like the badass, like, well, like it depends on if you're a SEAL, you're definitely a badass, but like certain units like wear those because like these are what the SEALs wear, you know. Like,
yeah, like, I don't know about the Coast Guard's been wearing it, but you know, maybe there's
exactly
a reason.
But yeah, those are badass. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, dude, if you wear those and you didn't do something like specialized in combat, fuck you.
You don't we can't wear that. Like, we can't wear that ever. Like,
I can't wear that.
But like, that's some cool. That's pretty cool shit.
That is cool. Yeah,
you gotta earn that cool tactical shirt.
Yeah. No, I could wear a baseball shirt that kind of has a similar like sleeve, different color, but I can't.
That's cool.
Yeah. 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 All right. Is that it for the Rescue Swimmer Mindset podcast?
That's it. Tune in next week. And we got some stuff coming, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, thanks for listening, all you minnows, tadpoles, and dragonflies. I'm bringing that back.
All right, do it.
Right on. All right, buddy.
All right, see ya. Peace.